Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
Man, it's good to be back home. If you saw my post on social media, you might know that I was gone the month of July in Ecuador, South America, and had this crazy idea that I was going to play a little squash. I met another American who was hanging at the Ocean Club in Playas, Ecuador, where I was staying. He was a pretty experienced squash player, and I said, I've always wanted to try that. I'm a good tennis player. Let me give it a shot. Well, that became an expensive squash game, both physically and financially. I ended up breaking my ankle. I thought I just rolled it, and I actually even tried to walk it off, and that didn't work. But I did stumble back home. I thought I sprained it, so I had it up. I was icing it, and for a couple days, people were saying, well, you should go to the hospital just in case, just to see. I said, no. I said, well, you know, you could just get an x-ray, cost you $30 in an hour of your time. Why not just do it? So I said, okay. Went to the hospital. We had to go there anyways to visit my wife's aunt who is in the hospital. And so I said, well, since we're here, let's just do it. And they took x-rays of my foot and it turns out I broke it, fractured the fibula, and I had to have surgery and I had to have it quickly. So they put a temporary cast on me and I actually had surgery in Ecuador. And let me just tell you, it was a harrowing experience. I thought they'd put me out, but they didn't put me out. They actually put a needle in my spine. It felt like a coat hanger going down the back of my spine, right into my tailbone. It was one of the strangest feelings I've ever had, for sure. And this warm sensation kind of came over me. I started to get tingly and they basically paralyzed me from the waist down. So I was awake for the surgery. I actually heard the screws being put into me in the plate. I have 6 screws in me now. I could actually feel like the reverberation in my bones all the way, even though I couldn't feel it in my feet, the reverberation, like you pluck a guitar string. I felt it all the way up my spine. It was chilling. And so I was laying there awake having surgery for an hour. And it was not a fun experience. The plane ride home was tough. I had a couple weeks to recover in Ecuador and then I took the plane ride home and my leg cramped up. And so when I got home for like 7 hours, I had this vicious, vicious cramp like a Charlie horse that just won't go away. And I was a little concerned it might even be some blood clotting, but the doctor assured me I'd be fine. So I'm finally now feeling relatively pain-free and can breathe a little bit again, but it was just a real heck of an experience. Luckily, had my wife there at my side. They were able to even sneak her in to the surgery. I think you can do things like that in Ecuador, I guess, in third world countries, developing world countries. The rules are a little bit more relaxed, but she was holding my hand and holding me while I was getting needles in me and everything else. So it was, if I didn't have her, I don't think I would have got through it. Hopefully you heard her. It was actually that same week that she was on Private Club Radio from the pre-recorded episode we did before I left. And she gave some really great tips on how to relieve stress. And so to have her there while I was probably at one of my most stressful times in my life, I really saw what we talked about on this episode play out in real life. And so that episode's extremely valuable. Hope you go back. It was just about 3 weeks ago now. Hope you go back and listen to it. Anna Aloisi. Really great episode. But I'm back here in Tampa. I'm so excited to be at my office, even though I've got my leg up here on a chair. It's nice to be able to do this show and to try to get back to work a little bit. I've still got some recovery to do. I won't be able to walk for a few more weeks. Certainly won't be able to play golf for a few months, if not longer. Might be not until next year until I can really play golf, which I'm extremely bummed about, but that's what I get for trying to play a sport that I've never played before with the wrong shoes in the wrong country. Lesson learned, cost me $4,500, that lesson, plus the agony. But anyways, always get travel insurance. There's another lesson for you. If you're going to do any traveling, if you go to any of these conferences that are out of the country or going on vacation, get travel insurance. it's worth it. It doesn't cost you much. Learn from my mistake. So now that that story's out of the way, let's talk about our guests that are coming on. We've got two guests today. Really, really spectacular folks. We're going to speak to Dr. Matthew Samuel of Johnson & Wales University, and he just conducted a faculty internship. So what he did was spend time at 15 different private clubs and just learned from them and tried to trend spot. And so he's got six really, really, really great tips, some six categories worth of information to share with us on what he learned and some advice that I think you can take back to your club and really, really get a lot out of. We're also going to be speaking with Donna Coyne of the Professional Club Marketing Association. You're going to hear all about the upcoming conference they're putting on in Chicago and learn a little bit more about the association if you don't know about them. So she'll be up right after Dr. Samuel. Without further ado, let's get our featured guest on the show. Well, I'm joined again by Dr. Matthew Samuel of Johnson & Wales University. He was a guest, if you remember, about a year and a half or so ago, and really had some great insights into what happens around clubs. And he just recently completed a faculty internship visiting 15 private clubs, and he's gleaned a ton of information from those clubs. So happy to have Dr. Samuel once again here on Private Club Radio. Welcome, Dr. Samuel.
Thank you, Gabe. It's great to be back, and I appreciate all that you do, and your source is very valuable to students in the classroom, so I thought I'd give you a plug for that as well.
Awesome. That's really, I'm really happy to hear that. So you just completed this 15-club faculty internship, so I'm really interested to see some of the things that you gleaned from visiting all these different clubs and some of the chords that were struck. So I know the first one really relates to technology and how clubs really need to adapt in terms of tech. So can you give us some of your insights from the clubs you visited?
Sure. So one of the things I saw, I actually walked away with six particular areas that I identified. The first one being technology. I think the new and most exciting part of technology is with the club applications. I see a lot of clubs using their own app, and what it does is it allows members to retrieve the information that they need and interact with club services 24/7. And I would note, for clubs that are thinking about an application, once they decide on the app, they shouldn't miss this as an educational opportunity to include multi-generational members. I mean, it could be a training activity. The second part of tech, which I thought was very interesting, obviously members have preferences, and I saw several managers using their POS system to record those preferences in the database so that all staff had access to it, so that they could deliver a higher level of service.
Yeah, really nice. I do see clubs, quite a few clubs, bringing on more apps and technology and tracking more and more things, and that can only lead to more personalized experiences, I got to think, for members. So it's such a huge component. Another component that a lot of managers that listen to the show are always concerned with is governance. So what were some of your key takeaways from your internship in terms of governance?
Yes, that has been an important discussion, and from my point of view, you know, part of the faculty internship was to try to emerge myself into the club industry segment, and I've had exposure to other industry segments, but it's a really important difference in how managers actually manage. So my takeaway from that seems to be that members suggest and managers do. That's kind of the model. Mm-hmm. But building relationships with all members, especially those who engage in early committee work, is important. I had heard on more than one occasion that you know, the interaction with presidents of boards sometimes weren't positive, and that, you know, grudges were held and there were job security issues. I was surprised to hear that, but it, you know, the importance of developing these relationships early in their committee work, I would I glean as being very important. And some of the takeaways the managers talked about were attending committee meetings and help to structure goals. If there aren't timelines or agendas provided, the manager should step in and help the committees with those, and really to run a more efficient meeting, and maybe distribute the agenda a few days before the meeting. But as I sat and thought about this a little bit more, there's often ongoing obstacles to clear communication between managers and the board. And many times this exists because the club itself has weakly defined or outdated or forgotten value systems. And we'll talk a little bit more about values and shared values a little bit later on today. But the managers and the members need to understand what the club purpose is and really what the culture of the club is. And that helps to set the foundation for clear communications.
Yeah, I love that. I think you can only make good decisions when you've got, you know, culture and the mission and vision of the club really top of mind. I think that gets lost a lot of times in boardrooms, unfortunately. So yeah, I love that insight. Now, member services was another one that I found really interesting. So can you tell us what insights you gleaned in terms of member services?
Yeah, I thought this was really good. You know, I think many clubs look at this as trend-setting, and it's really, you know, I'd like to take a step back on that. I've heard multiple times the managers describing the club as an extension of the members' home. So the opportunity to create additional services, really, I mean, I take a step back and look at this from a non-capital expenditure. We're not talking about building anything. But what it does, well, it'll increase frequency of visits. The potential to consume traditional services and offerings are important, but what we're trying to do, what I think the managers should be trying to do, is to create a perceived increased value of being a member of the club. So if you think about everyday tasks that we all do, I mean, not necessarily members, but members are completing and consuming tasks and goods and services outside the club. So some thoughts I had and some observations that I saw dovetailing with an already hot trend of health and fitness, where maybe capital expenditure has already been invested and it could be substantial. You could dovetail things like haircuts, salon, massages, nail salons. So as an extension of that visitation to the club. Other thoughts include dry cleaning. I mean, you certainly could do a laundry drop-off, and I would think there'd be an opportunity for a volume discount with local businesses. Services like tailoring, community-based activities, clothing drives, blood drives, notary services, document shredding. And I was talking to a manager about how, you know, people don't like to go to car dealerships when they're looking to purchase a new car.
Right.
But what a great opportunity. You have all the clubs, most of the clubs have parking facilities. You know, certainly country clubs, not all clubs, but they have the space. And I could see new cars that fit that demographic just being parked in the lot there as a, you know, let's go look at this. And I would think the dealerships would be very open to that, you know, based on the product placement.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to just take my dry cleaning to the club. I would love to do my get my suits tailored there, like you mentioned, get my car washed there or detailed. I think the more productive you can be really adds to the experience, because we're in this world, especially people who are club members are usually running and gunning for the most part if they're not retired. But, you know, talking about your Gen Xers and that sort of age group, the younger baby boomers, you know, they're trying to be as productive as possible. And so why not make the club a hub of activity where they can be productive? I love that tip. The other subject that you looked at was food and beverage program. Can you give us some of those insights?
Oh yeah. So that was really, eye-opening, being a food and beverage, person myself. So beyond the fixed, dining, facilities and even the mobile or vending being provided, I'm I started to see, or a lot of managers started to use food to go programs. And I really think this can create a greater membership value or perceived value and build a closer relationship with what the members' needs are. So some of the things I saw were family Friday dinners to go, specialty occasion cakes, pies, pastries for when you have to go and bring things into the office. They could stop by the club and pick all that food up. And deli platters were some of the kind of to-go items, all of which can be planned. My suggestion is you start with your most popular items and you set time frames. You certainly can make this available through your club app or webpage, and it would be manageable. The other discussion I saw frequently was the discussion regarding food minimums again. I took a second look at this, and really from a value standpoint, I think members can't feel as though they must come to the club and fulfill fiscal obligations. Rather, what the managers might focus on is how they could make the experience more prideful, having club, the family, friends, and prospective members is really a good lens to think about this through. So how does that work? I think you need to allow the members to be able to have time to plan the event or host the event so you could give them time. Currently, I think it's been the standard to bill minimums quarterly. So, social and life events don't happen only 30-day cycles. So the member would still pay the food minimum, but maybe clubs would think about billing them quarterly rather than monthly. And I would suspect that the member might spend more than what the minimum is. And also other managers seem to be discussing including food to go and possibly beverages in the minimum. And again, communicating membership value rather than the cost of belonging is kind of what I'm suggesting, a different approach to, a difficult problem that's been around for a while.
Yeah, I love those tips for sure. And I've seen some clubs here locally making $1 million a year just on their to-go orders. So, I mean, that's a huge bolster to your bottom line if you can get something like that going. Especially if you're in a gated community, I think it makes a lot of sense. Let's talk next about multi-generational activities. I know you study that quite a bit.
Yes. So that's been something that that we have been really looking at also in the classroom as part of an activity. To create events or think about creating events. So it is one of the biggest challenges. The managers are trying to service up to five generations of members. So what I think is a good start is what I call creating connection points. It's a good place to start thinking about this. So what connection points are, they're social and formal activities that members and their families already typically are participating in, and they're not limited to their home. So similar to what we talk about with club culture and shared values, these activities are deeply meaningful and they've developed over time within the families. So why is this important or how is it applicable to clubs? It's highly likely that given the membership process, that there are groups of members existing at each club that share the same preferences for activities. So examples might be baking, barbecuing, quilting, knitting, collecting, whatever, baseball cards, coins, board games. And interestingly enough, I was watching a documentary on pasta making. So I was thinking about that and how that might apply. So, what I see are large family events. They always have these large club events, which are great. But small group activities and high frequency focusing on an aspect of a family tradition could actually create more value, I think, to the member, especially if they think that that tradition within the family might be lost or forgotten. So I visualize maybe grandparents' recipes, that's something that they want to hold on to, and that might have that might spark some ideas for activities. And then the other thing that I think that they can currently use is leveraging existing sports activities. You know, whatever the sporting event is at the club or what that they offer. So creating multi-generational relationships rather than a competition. So they could create teams comprised of four decades or age ranges. And they could do like nine-hole tournaments or racket games, and then do a small gathering after. And then the last part about this, and this actually kind of was fleshed out in one of the classroom activities that I did last year, consider storytelling programs. If you have senior members engage in educating younger members about the club, I think that has value. And likewise, in the member recruitment and orientation process, you can think about including children of the members, because this provides a role for them and also creates a wider understanding of maybe a perceived value for new members that are looking at the club.
Nice. I really especially like that storytelling aspect and the family recipes. I think both of those tips are really, really good for a lot of clubs out there. The last one of your six tips here or six real main areas of focus during this internship, you looked at the shrinking talent pool and why that's affecting the private club industry in addition to a lot of other industries out there. So can you tell us what you learned about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not just the club industry. It's really affecting pretty much any firm that has employees. There's just less people in the age group, for starters, that are hireable. But it's also the nature of work is changing a little bit. So traditional work weeks and hours may no longer apply to the next generation of workers. So managers need to be aware of that. But I think the club environment has a distinctive advantage, and they need to leverage it. They have a great story to tell about the club work environment. One of my suggestions is that they stop talking about comp and benefit and begin to frame discussion around this value system that we've been kind of dancing around in our discussion. You could begin, these are observations that I saw in the internship, you could begin with discussions about safety, civility, and pride of ownership, all of which exist in varying levels at clubs, but they're highly desirable factors for attraction and retention of talent in employment. As an example, you know, I'm not a big proponent of blind ads, but in this case, a blind ad in a local paper, as example, something where you use phrasing, "Are you a food and beverage professional looking for a safe and courteous work environment with a well-respected local employer?" It adds this distinction. It adds this what we talk about in employment research, fit. So you might think about in your local area creating a club-only job fair. Certainly university internships, CMA student chapters, you might think about hosting a tour or hosting a club meeting. Class presentations, I've been using Skype for clubs that are not in our local area. And, you know, don't forget about the basics. Internal employee referral programs would be an excellent tool to use in the club environment.
I love those tips. Yeah, I mean, we got to get people excited to work in this industry that's so unique and so different and certainly has its challenges, but there's a lot of rewards as well. Well, that's a good lead in here to the grant that you received from the Club Foundation doing some research on employment. So you could tell us what's happening with that.
Yeah, so I was very excited. I applied for the research grant, and the goal of the study is to provide club managers insight into what factors influence attraction and retention of employees in the club industry. It's a pretty hot topic that everybody's been talking about. And I'm hoping to offer some suggestions based on the result. What the study will do is identify unique attributes of the club employment environment that are highly valued and shared. In my previous study of supermarket segment, as an example, honesty and ethics emerged as statistically significant among the dimensions surveyed. So what does that mean?
what it means is for that supermarket that was chosen for the study, if they implemented honesty and ethics as a focal point in the designing HR programs, it would be highly successful in attracting and retaining talent. The survey link is able to be distributed to the CMAA membership towards the end of the month.
That's really exciting. That's awesome. I can't wait to read that. It sounds like it's going to be an intriguing report, and I can't wait to see the findings that you come back with. If folks want to learn a little bit more about you, Dr. Samuel, or get in touch and maybe pick your brain a little bit, how would they do that?
They certainly could go to the Johnson & Wales website, www.jwu.edu under the faculty area, and all my information is available there. Or if you Google JWU Catalyst blog, you'll see some of the other articles I've written about the club environment, and my contact information is there.
You got an incredible knowledge base there, so I definitely recommend people check out that JWU website. Dr. Samuel, thanks so much, as always, for joining us. So many great insights. I really appreciated having you here on Private Club Radio again.
It was certainly my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to helping the managers and your listeners.
Well, joining me from the Professional Club Marketing Association is Donna Coyne, managing member. Donna, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Gabe. Thank you.
I'm getting super excited. We're just about a month out from the national conference you guys are putting on in Chicago, Illinois. So I'd love for you to tell us what's going on up there and what's getting you excited about the conference.
Oh, thank you, Gabe. We're very excited. We are about a month out. The conference is going to be held downtown Chicago, September 17th and 18th, with pre-conference education and events on September 15th and 16th. We are hosting the conference, and I believe on a prior show with Hannah Eanes with PCMA, she had talked about the relationship with the Palmer House Hotel and the private club industry. So I won't dwell on that, but I will say that we're excited to be downtown and at the Palmer House. And we also are excited about three local clubs within the Chicago market that is going to be engaging with PCMA in our conference. And that's the Chicago Yacht Club, the Union League Club, and then Medina Country Club. So we are major excited about these clubs opening their doors for our members to be able to come in and be a part of their club and learn about their club and engage with the professionals within their club. So we're very excited.
Especially can't wait to see Medina because I've never been there, but the clubhouse just looks absolutely gorgeous. The history there, obviously. So I'm really excited for that one.
Well, I have been there, and I will tell you, it is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what do they call that? Like arabesque or something, the architectural style? It's really unique anyways.
It is unique. They have a beautiful architectural design, especially in the foyer of the clubhouse. So I won't let a lot of secrets out, but I will encourage anybody and everybody who is going to be able to attend that event with us at Medina to do a little bit of reading ahead of time on their website because it is a spectacular place.
Absolutely. So if folks want to get registered for the conference and check out all these sessions and speakers and all the pre-conference education going on, where do they do that, Donna?
They merely just go to askpcma.org/conference. And that will give them the registration. If they scroll all the way down to the bottom, they will be able to see the actual online brochure by clicking the link on that page.
Fantastic. Yep, get registered, askpcma.org/conference. Definitely recommend you are attending. I will be there, and I hope to see you there too. Now, Donna, next thing, for folks who just aren't familiar with the PCMA as an association, can you tell us about your mission and what's happened since the inception up until present day?
Gabe, personally, having fulfilled the role of the membership professional in private clubs prior to being a part of developing PCMA, the mission of such an association was apparent to me. And having the opportunity to work with my co-developers who are also in the industry and in membership and marketing. It was apparent to them as well 23 years ago as to what our mission was going to be about. And I truly feel that our mission is still the same. And that mission is around the aspect of representing, so to represent the profession of membership marketing throughout the private club industry, to educate the membership and marketing professionals with the latest trends in the industry, to keep the professionals abreast of the best practices in our ever-changing industry, and to provide the professionals a certification process for the membership and marketing professionals so that their club leaders, such as board members and general managers, as well as even their members of their private clubs, will feel confident in accepting the membership and marketing professional as true members of the management team within each and every private club out there. And last, to provide recognition to a professional who in many clubs are directly held accountable for the club's membership growth and the initial onboarding of all new members, which therefore in large, you know, retrospect has them accountable for member retention. So to represent, to educate, and to provide recognition was our initial mission, and I feel it's still our mission today.
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely. I can see you guys doing that on a daily basis, and I've really been impressed the way you guys are ramping up some of your efforts, like social media and the newsletters, and I love reading the things that come mm-hmm. across my desk every day. So I know you're also realigning the mission, having it be all about the members. So can you let folks know what that means?
Yes, and realigning to me is a perfect description to the direction of PCMA today, because just a few seconds ago, I stated that our mission hasn't changed, but I truly believe that it hasn't, and not unlike the clubs of our very members, PCMA as a business tends to get caught up in the here and now, in trying to resolve specific issues or solutions for a member or a group of members, providing products and services, as opposed to focusing or having a greater emphasis and encompassing the benefits to our members as professionals in the private club. So PCMA's realigning process moving forward is really going to consist, at least initially, on three important influences. And that's to be have a stronger presence in the private club industry representing our members by building strong alliances with other professional associations in our industry, and strong alliances with service providers and product providers in the industry. More of an educating process rather than a selling process. We tend to, let me send you something right over, opposed to providing an education on how that professional could do it. So we truly feel that with building the stronger alliances within our industry, PCMA hopes to provide our members the opportunity to engage with those other associations more and to utilize the service and product providers whom they need to assist them in their specific clubs through their PCMA relationship, and to focus more on educating our members on how to be the expert in doing something, as opposed to PCMA providing an end product to our members. I feel the education alone will enable our members to truly be the experts in their own individual clubs. And thirdly, is empowering our members to be experts. We all, I feel, know personally that hands-on experience carries you much further in understanding specific jobs or positions than just utilizing education via book knowledge. So to put it in the perspective of empowering our members of PCMA to be experts, PCMA will be utilizing the peer-to-peer education process as an association. We're very fortunate to have many members who have been through the many evolutions of this very position within the private club. And as an association, we're also very fortunate to attract many new membership professionals who are brand new to our industry. So our perspective is, what a better way to learn and to understand someone's new role and position responsibilities than to learn directly from professionals who have truly been in the position, kind of boots on the ground. So we're very excited here at PCMA to say that our focus and our direction that going in now, not only going into our 23rd annual conference, but also as we approach our 25th anniversary in 2020. So it's all about the member.
That's exciting. Yeah, 25 years. Congratulations in advance for that one. That's quite an accomplishment. So definitely, again, want to recommend that people check out everything about the upcoming national conference in September. You can do that again, once again, at askpcma.org/conference. Donna, thanks so much for joining me here today on Membership Insights. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week here on Private Club Radio. Hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope to catch you back here next week. Go back, listen to some of the old episodes if you were looking for a fix between now and Monday. Don't forget to share the show with your friends. We have our app on iTunes and on Google on the Play Store. So download the app. That's the easiest way to listen to the show. That way you have a button right on your phone so you can listen to the show anytime you need it. I'll catch you back next week. Until then, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by Concert Golf Partners, helping to preserve and enhance private golf and country clubs. Concert Golf has the capital, expertise, and private club hospitality experience to help upscale private clubs achieving long-term success and membership growth. For 25 years, Concert Golf has allowed private club members to focus on simply enjoying their club. Visit concertgolfpartners.com to learn more about the recapitalization process.